Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking, a mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
Hello and welcome to this episode of The Hacker Factory. I'm Philip Wiley. I refer to myself as the Hacker Maker because I enjoy helping people get started into pen testing careers as well as mentoring. And each episode I have someone with a really unique story that hopefully will resonate with someone, and usually entertaining and very informative. So I'm very happy today to have my guest on this episode, my guest and friend Patrick Lafferty, the host of the Layer 8 conference. And so this is going to be a pretty interesting episode, and I'm sure you'll enjoy what he has to share. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Thank you so much for having me, Philip. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, enjoy having you. I had a lot of fun on your podcast, so this should be as fun as well. So,
yeah, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. That works well.
That's the way it works. But yeah, that's a good thing. I need guests too, and that's good. Someone with your background is pretty interesting. You got some pretty cool stories. So why don't you tell our listeners about yourself?
Sure. I am currently a pen tester. I've been doing that for about 5 years. Let's see. Do you want like a full story of how I got to there, or is that something that you want to get to later on?
Sure. Let's go ahead and do the full story. Yeah.
All right. Let's do the full story.
Back. I like stories.
Yeah. You go ahead. You go get yourself a drink, and I'm just going to talk for a while.
put it on autopilot.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be it. So it's really interesting because the more people that you talk to in this industry, it seems as though the very typical path into it is going to be an atypical path. There doesn't seem to be any one way that people get in. Sure, there's going to be the people that have always been dabbling with computers since they've been teenagers. They go to college for computer science, and then they jump in and do some kind of job, whether that's going to be through offensive security, blue team things, or anything like that. But then there's also lots of people who don't do anything like that. I fall into that latter group. So it's always interesting when we start talking about our initial backgrounds and telling people where I got started. And it's interesting when I ask people, like, where do you think I started and what college degree do you think I have? And, you know, of course, it's, you know, not really a fair question, but I have 2 degrees, both in sports medicine. So my first, when I went to undergrad for sports medicine to a state college in New Hampshire. And then when I finished there, I figured out that I hadn't really learned enough in order to pass the national certification exam that's required to do the job that I wanted to do, which was to be an athletic trainer. And I always had the goal to be an athletic trainer in professional baseball. So because I couldn't pass the certification exam, I had to go to grad school. So I went to Indiana University and got another degree in sports medicine / kinesiology, if anybody's ever heard that word before. And then after 1 year of grad school, which was, you know, that's the length of the program, passing that certification exam was not a problem at all. So from there, I was able to jump right into getting the type of job that I wanted to, which was minor league baseball. You know, I left Indiana and jumped in my car and drove right up to Lethbridge, Alberta, if anybody's ever heard of that place, and got to work for a minor league baseball team up there, which was not affiliated with any major league team at all. It was considered an independent team playing against other affiliated teams. So one of the things that we had was players from affiliated teams. I think we had players from the Cleveland Indians, from the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Florida Marlins. And when I say players from there, I mean like low-level minor league players. So I got to meet people from those organizations. And that got me hired to the Florida Marlins organization. So I got to work in the minor leagues with the Florida Marlins for a couple of years, which was, you know, kind of a dream come true, being able to be around the professional athletes all the time. But the thing that I didn't like a whole lot with that was the travel. People often ask, well, do you travel with the team? Yes. Not only do you travel with the team when you're a minor league athletic trainer, but you kind of do everything. In addition to being the sports medicine person, you're also figuring out the food, you're doing the laundry, you're handing out meal money, you're letting the bus driver know where to go, getting people there on time. So get to do all those kinds of things. And those bus trips just got to be a little bit too much. So from there, I decided, well, I'm just going to not do this anymore and stay home, and moved to Rhode Island and got a job at a physical therapy clinic. Well, after about 3 years of that, I kind of decided this isn't really for me either. And I think this was right around 1998, where the internet seemed to be a thing that was working out pretty well. And it seemed to be a future. You know, maybe there's probably listeners that can't believe there was once a time that the internet was like this up and coming thing. But yep, that actually did happen. So I was trying to figure out, like, well, how do I do this conversion from being in sports medicine to working something with computers? So what I did was I took this really bad job at a university who had awesome benefits for their classes, and just worked a terrible job for about a year and took some classes in C++ and Java. And after that, I was then able to get a job teaching Java programming as a contractor to Sun Microsystems. So I got to do that for a couple of years. And then some people might remember some events of September 2001, where that really crashed everyone's training budget. Nobody wanted to spend any kind of money on training. So that really killed the whole consultancy business. So from there, I was unemployed, had to find a new job. And the new job that I got was I landed at another different local university, building websites, teaching classes in Microsoft Office, and eventually just kind of worked my way through the system, learning some system administration, managing web server, managing content management system, those sorts of things. And then one day, it was kind of a little fortuitous bounce in my favor. It just so happened that the chief security officer of the university's office was right next to mine. So I got to talk to him from time to time. But then the university also got hacked, and it was by a group that you would not consider to be malicious at all. So I would call it an inadvertent hack, because it was actually Google that hacked the university by accident. And it wasn't really Google per se. It was that the university's web server had been so taken over by all these people putting their web shells onto there, and they were putting in redirects, files to point the Google search engines to their stores that they had set up. And finally, one day it was just too much. So every time Google was coming in and indexing the web server, one day it just finally crashed. So my fortuitous bounce was that the chief security officer said, you've shown some kind of interest in security issues, so I'm going to put this on you to go figure out what happened and let us know how to fix it, which seemed like a whole lot of fun. This was like my first steps into security. I had never seen a web shell before. I had never really thought too much about the security. You know, I was building websites and starting to get a little bit involved with OWASP and going to conferences like that and thinking, this is pretty neat. But it was that real hack that got me involved with it. And I thought, this stuff is so neat, I'm going to share this information with others. So I wrote a little conference presentation on basically how these web shells shut down an entire university's web server. And based on that presentation, I got a phone call one day from Akamai Technologies saying, we saw that you were giving presentations. Do you want to come work for us? So they offered me a job in their CSIRT, their computer security incident response team. So that was kind of fun, because if you're not too familiar with that company, they do a whole lot of work with web application firewalls and things. So I got to see their alerts for all their customers all the time and get to learn a whole lot more about security. And then I had a friend who contacted me one day and said, well, we need somebody that can kind of help out a little bit with pen testing, and we'll just give you web stuff for right now. I was like, no, I don't know anything about offensive security. I can't. He's like, but you do web stuff. So let's give it a shot. I was like, okay. So I started doing a little bit of pen testing on the side with the web application things. And then finally I realized this is what I really like. And I talked to my wife at the time and she was like, the only time that I see you truly happy is when you're doing that pen testing. So I said, okay. And I reached out to some friends at Rapid7. I'm like, by the way, are you hiring for pen testers? And they said, yes, we are. So that's how I ended up as a pen tester. And I've been doing that for the last 5 years or so. How's that for a roundabout story of how I got there?
That was good. You got through it fairly quick too. So I mean, that's a very interesting background and very unique with the sports medicine and working for the, you know, the different baseball teams. So did you ever play baseball yourself?
I did. I played baseball from Little League all the way through high school. And then even after I was working in the physical therapy clinic, I joined a men's adult amateur baseball league. So actually, I've played more baseball as an adult than I did as a kid. Cause I think it's about 20 years now or so. I've been playing, you know, with guys my age, which is, you know, considered a little bit old geriatric, but we still get out there and it's fun to knock the ball around a little bit. So yeah, definitely played ball growing up and still do a little bit.
Yeah, that's cool. That's one of the things, I guess our backgrounds are kind of similar to the athletic piece of things. So that's pretty cool.
But I never wrestled a bear.
Yeah. You had more sense than that, I guess.
You're quite unique in that way.
So yeah, that's a really cool background, you guys. So, you know, all the coding experience and interesting the teaching experience and the web development, all that, that's really cool way to get into it. And one of the things I share with people when they're trying to get into to pen testing is what do you need to know to start out? And that's kind of part of the reason I wrote my book. And so this stories like yours is great to show people because there may be someone listening on here that's a web developer and it may tell them this is how I get into pen testing, you know, because as you know, having that background in that technology, it's easier to break into it if you understand how it works.
Yeah. Anytime somebody asks, like, how do I get into pen testing? That's usually one of the pieces of advice that I give them is learn how to build something before you're trying to break it. And whether that's going to be a system administrator or network administrator or a web developer, it definitely helps to know how things work in order to figure out how. Not so much that they shouldn't work, but what else can they do that they weren't really intended to do or be able to break them? One of the stories that I like to use for that, for the ease of breaking, is imagine if you had like this really big building that you needed to take down. You need to destroy this building. And you have a choice. You can either get this Phil Wiley-sized guy with a sledgehammer, or you can get the architect with the blueprints. Who is going to know how to take that building down or be able to take that building down faster? You know, you can have this big, huge, strong guy swinging a sledgehammer at it all day. But if you have the architect who put together the building with the blueprints, that person probably knows exactly where all the weak spots are, and they're going to be probably more efficient at it. And I think if you're somebody that has done the building, and that's where the web development or network or system administration comes in, that's where you're going to also have a probably better idea of where those weak spots are and be able to find those more quickly. So that's usually where I like to give people advice for getting into the offensive side is, you know, learn how to build something before you jump in trying to break it.
Yeah, that's great advice. One of my first managers, when I was a pen tester, he always encouraged us to learn how to build. Really wasn't so keen on take this pen testing course, this hacking course. He's always telling us to build something. And that was some good advice. And I like your analogy about the blueprints too, because that's also another good reason to explain to people why with applications that white box pen testing is a good idea too. The more information you have, the better you can test it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it seems rare that the clients really want to make it a true white box. There are multiple times that I want to, when I'm doing a web application pen test, and I'll ask, like, can I have the source code? And they're just like, no, we're not giving you the source code to our web application. It's like, but that's going to help me do a better job for you. But they're just not willing to hand that over.
Yeah. They don't realize sometimes, you know, because the limited amount of time you have to test, the more information you got, the better. And sometimes, I guess, with some companies, it's about the checkbox, getting it completed. And if things look secure, that's good enough. But, you know, what happens if if they get breached and somebody like gets some really talented attacker in there and they figure things out, and, you know, so they don't want to, you know, kind of depend on luck. So that's,
yeah, we're just seeing everything, you know, like on a web application test, usually from the browser perspective. And there are some times where you can just kind of tell that you're almost there and there's something that's blocking you, and, or it might be some other condition that you need to try. And it just seems as though if you could actually jump into the source code and see exactly what is happening, that you might be able to figure out, it's like, oh, instead of using this, you know, alphanumeric string, then maybe instead, if I throw in special characters, that's going to be something that breaks it, you know, just being able to look at it that way. But yeah, they're often worried about handing over their intellectual property.
Yeah. So what, you know, you mentioned, you talk, you know, you got a lot of experience in web app pen testing. So what other types of pen testing do you specialize in?
Well, in my job, I get to do a lot of different types of pen testing. It's always a whole lot of fun to work on companies' internal networks, being able to see just how far inside of a network that you can get and what level of privileges that you can get to. But we also do external networks, where it's basically the perspective that you start with is the same as the other few billion or so people on the planet that have internet access. And those can be a whole lot of fun and even more rewarding when you can just go from a browser or a terminal window all the way inside of somebody's network as well. In addition to the web applications, you can do API testing, wireless testing to see if you can get onto somebody's wireless network and see where you can go from there, mobile applications. And then there's also the fun stuff of social engineering. It's one thing to attack networks and to attack computers, but it feels like a totally different thing when you start trying to bypass people and the people's defenses and trying to figure out the psychology of that. Only because if you have an idea how the computers are going to work, chances are they're going to work the same way every single time. And then the same things are going to work every single time if the defenses are set up the same way. But when you're doing social engineering, that's not the case, because you don't necessarily know who the people are that you're going to be interacting with. You don't know exactly how much that they're expecting, how well educated they are in these types of things, or even what moment that you're going to catch people at. So it's sometimes fun as well to try to do some of the phishing engagements, which is going to be trying to get information through email or phone calls, or which is also referred to as vishing, for voice phishing. Those are some of the other fun types of engagements that you can go to as well. And when you're making the phone calls, there's like such a rush with some of those as well, where you start off just like so nervous and you're just worried about getting busted on some of the calls. And that happens sometimes. But the thing that I always try to remind myself is that we're on the same team. The other person just doesn't quite know it. I'm doing this to help you. I'm doing this to educate you and help with your security posture. So if you catch me, good. That's a good thing for you. And if you don't, well, we can just kind of put that in the report and help you to be better for next time.
Yeah, very interesting. It's kind of interesting when you really think about social engineering. That's probably the first kind of hacking, if you think about it, you know, because when there was no technology, you know, people were trying to con other people. And it's just interesting how a lot of people that don't have the technical skills, that this may be an area for them to get into. And I've known some people that's been their entrance into the industry was because they were good at dealing with people, and they were, you know, good at building that rapport and getting people's trust and all that. So that really, yeah, the psychology really makes that interesting.
And I have a presentation that I give too about social engineering a little bit. And one of the questions that I ask people is, who are the best social engineers that you've ever encountered? And people will always come up with like, oh, car salesman, or, you know, they'll name a famous hacker or something like that. It's like, yeah, those are all good. But the best social engineers in the world is your kid. Because your kids know how to play you. How many times did that little kid, little four-year-old, just be like, Dad, can I have ice cream? And it's like, no, it's before dinner. And then your daughter just like flashes you the eyes and said, but please. And it's like, okay, fine. You can have your, that kid knows how to social engineer you and get exactly what she wants. Kids are by far, I think, the best social engineers, because they know how to play their parents. They know how to jump on the weaknesses and get what they want. So yeah, if you have kids, I'm guessing you've been social engineered by them at some point for them to get what they want.
Yeah, that's a great comparison.
My kid has definitely done that to me, no question.
So you've been pwned a few times, I guess.
Oh, for sure. She can have whatever she wants if she asks the right way. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm a girl dad myself too, and so that just makes it, yeah, makes it a little bit easier for them, I think.
Yep. If she asks the right way, yep, you can. Yeah. Yep, you can have that.
So speaking of social engineering, you know, you host the conference. Could you tell our listeners about the conference that you host?
Yeah, we have the Layer 8 conference that I co-organized with my co-organizer, Lee Snyder. This year is going to be our fourth year of holding the conference. A couple of years ago, it was one of those things where Lee and I had been working on B-Sides conferences for a few years, and that was a whole lot of fun to work on that. And then we just decided, like, let's see if we can do our own thing. And we stepped back for a little bit and wanted to do something that was going to be new and different from others, since it seems as though, you know, there's a lot of great conferences out there. But at that time, there didn't seem to be a conference that really focused on social engineering. So we created that 4 years ago. And it's been great starting from scratch. The first year was just focused on social engineering. Now it is social engineering and OSINT, or open source intelligence gathering. This year is going to be a virtual conference on October 8th. So anybody anywhere can attend. You can attend in your pajamas, any from wherever in the world. It's going to be all online. We do plan on it being back in person next year, and the in-person location has been Providence, Rhode Island. So it's always great to see people come to Providence. And it's a whole lot of fun, and you're just like, you're probably getting to, realize with the podcast, is one of the fun things about it is it's like a golden ticket to be able to meet and talk to all these super incredible people from all over the world who have the same interests. And one of the things that I often like to do, because I also a long time ago created a local meetup group. And one of the reasons that I created the meetup group was just because I wanted to learn more about security stuff, and I wanted to hear from speakers. So I thought, well, this will be pretty cool, and it'll give me an excuse to learn from speakers by having them come in and just talk to me. So, you know, so I don't want to be totally selfish. You know, why not invite other people in there too? So that the conference is really something similar, where it's a way that I get to learn a whole bunch and then also network with hundreds of other people. And it's been a whole lot of fun to see the whole thing grow and just build up the Layer 8 conference for a few years now.
Yeah, I can imagine how that could be, because just having experience running a meetup, all that you learn from that, the connections you make and how that helps. I can just imagine what a conference would be like.
Yeah, it's like a whole nother step up, only because at a meetup, you know, you have a speaker, a couple of speakers, but at a conference is like a whole day thing where you have 20, 30 different speakers. You have hundreds of attendees of all different interests, and everybody networking and sharing information about the specific topics. And that's one of the nice things, I think, too, about Layer 8 being this specific niche focusing on social engineering and OSINT is virtually almost everybody there has some kind of interest in those, either one or both of those topics. You know, we certainly also get people that just want to visit and attend the conference to figure it out. But we get people that have all types of interests in there as well that that attend the conference.
That's really great. That's kind of cool to have a conference that focuses on OSINT and social engineering. Like you said, so many other conferences have other, you know, a lot of other topics. You know, not all of them are red team topics. A lot of them are various different blue team and different areas. So it's kind of a good idea. I really like that idea to specialize in something like that. So that makes it nice, you know, because a lot of times people that are social engineers are trying to learn social engineering goes to a conference, and they're probably lucky to get to hear one talk or maybe a couple talks on OSINT, but to have that much, that's really good educational opportunity for people who really want to pick up that area.
Yeah. And it's great too, because we attract like a lot of the top-notch speakers from around the world, where we've had people like, you know, Tinkersack, we've had Snow, Whitney Maxwell, Chris Kirsch, Chris Hadnagy, or all the different types of people that have been there. But at the same time, one of the things that we really like to do at Layer 8 is not focus on the names and the people, but more about the content that the people are going to bring. And that's some of the feedback that I've gotten too about the speakers is that we don't necessarily just focus on the big names, even though it's great. I love having those big name people, the experts in the field there. But we also strongly encourage people who are just starting out, who have done some of their own research. A couple of years ago, we had a high school student who had incredible research that he had done. And in the feedback, he was one of the highest rated presenters that we had. I don't know that very many other conferences would necessarily welcome a high school student with original research to their conference, but that's the type of thing that we love to do. We love to look for some of those new types of speakers, ones that people have never heard of before, because so often they get overlooked and they just have such incredible work that they've done that they have to share.
Yeah, that's a great idea, because I know one of the things, like with this podcast, I would let someone on that are hobbyists or people that have gotten certifications to learn this, because, you know, your audience, sometimes they can, you know, connect with that person or understand better. You know, they see someone like Chris Hadnagy or a Jason Street. They think, how could I ever be that good? But then you see someone that just started, and that kind of gives people hope. It's kind of what I like to refer to that to is kind of sports analogies, because, you know, with world records and stuff, people hit records. You don't see anyone doing it, but once someone breaks that record, then everyone's doing it. Once you can prove to people they can do it, then you see progress. So that's the great thing I think you're doing with having the people with the less experience.
And that was another discussion that I actually had this past week on my own podcast with Micah Hoffman, where Micah is he's pushing the OSINT field forward every single day. He's, you know, one of the huge names, I believe, now in the OSINT field. And he's also given presentations in the past on imposter syndrome. So I was asking him, like, you tell us all about imposter syndrome and some of the imposter feelings that you've had in the past. But now, Micah, you've gotten to the point where people are going to look at you in the OSINT field and probably feel some imposter feelings themselves when they start trying to compare themselves to you, when they see you as this huge person in the industry and they start trying to compare themselves to you. And Micah came back with an incredible answer to that. And he's like, but what people need to do is really compare themselves to themselves and look back at where you've been and where you are today. Because that was one of the fun things about having Micah on that I was asking him, was really where he's been and how he got to where he is today. And we went through the full story. And I think all people really do is they look at people like him or look at Chris Hadnagy and they think like, well, I'll never get there. But they don't see the path that those people took. They don't see all the work that those people took. They don't know that those people were in the same place that, you know, everyone else sees themselves. And all it really takes is just getting a little bit better each day. Don't think that you're going to be, you know, like you mentioned with the sports world, you're not going to be the, you know, the LeBron James of this field in a day. These kind of things take work. They take getting a little bit better each day and just keep thinking, am I getting better? Am I moving forward? Am I better than I was yesterday? Am I better than I was last year? So instead of comparing yourselves to some of these people in the industry, just keep comparing yourself to yourself. And are you moving forward and are you getting better?
Yeah, that's some great advice. Speaking of Micah, I took my SANS 542 course to him in Boston back in 2014. It was either he was doing the SANS mentor. I think it was either his first or second assisted SANS course. So I got to meet him there. He's pretty cool. It's been interesting to see, because he was really interested in OSINT then. I'm not really sure how good he was at the time, but then just to see all over the place, all you hear about is the OSINT stuff through him and the good things he's doing. So.
Yeah, he does incredible work with it. And a lot of the things that he's built and created since then are just amazing.
So yeah, we're getting down close to the end of the show. And one of the things I wanted to do is ask you what your advice would be for someone starting out.
That's awesome, because that's a very similar question that I ask people on my own podcast as well. And it's great when I get to ask that question to so many other people. So I get to hear so many other answers and I get to hear and steal some of the good ones as well. And one of the really great ones that I've heard recently that I loved and I totally agree with is, if you're starting out, one of the best things that you can do is put yourself out there. because that's really how you're going to get hired in this field. It's like, you can go out and you can do all the work, you can get all the certifications, and you can look great on paper. And that certainly helps. That's going to be good. But whether that's fortunately or unfortunately, people do get hired based off of people they know when they're looking for people to hire. They're gonna be like, well, I know this guy and he's really good, or she's really good, so why don't we bring in that person? So go out and be that person. Go to things like a B-Sides, go to things like Dallas Hackers Association, these sorts of things, and get to know people. Join the Discord servers, join the Slack servers, and don't just lurk, but actually join in and bring something to the table. One of the things that I also like to tell people is, even if it's done before, if it's new to you, that's great. It doesn't matter if somebody else has already built some specific tool. If you want to go and build it and that's how you're going to learn, do it. It doesn't matter if it's been done before. The main point of you doing that sort of thing is for you to learn how to do it. So those are probably some of the biggest things, is in addition to getting the technical, is talk to people, do your networking, get out there and experience things and let people know who you are and get to know who others are. You know, and like we were just saying, as you get to these events and get to see people and learn from them, all these little bits are certainly going to help you to move forward as well.
Great advice. I think people get caught up too much on certifications sometimes and miss out on things like that. You can have all the certifications in the world, but if you don't know people, it's going to be more difficult to get into the field.
Yeah, the certification is definitely great, but I would probably say that if you had to choose in an absolute between certifications and knowing people and having all the other background being the same, I would go for the latter. Definitely go out there and do your personal networking, your internet working with people. I really think that everything else being equal of knowing people versus certifications, that being able to know people and having your networking being done is going to take you further in this field.
Now we're getting down to the end of the show. Is there anything you'd like to share that we didn't discuss?
Let's see. Probably about the only thing would be to also check out the Layer 8 podcast. I've been doing that for a while. And just like the Layer 8 conference, the Layer 8 podcast solely focuses on social engineering and OSINT topics. And we have, it's free. It's open to anybody. A new episode every Monday. And sometimes people tell stories. Other times we do interviews. But really, it's going to be just about social engineering and open source intelligence, gathering techniques, strategies, tools from the experts in the field. So hopefully people can check that out as well.
Yeah, and we'll put that in the show notes so people can check out your podcast. So thanks for joining. It's been awesome. It's been a great discussion.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thanks everyone for joining, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Bugcrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.